beyond the bay.
He keeps himself in trim by bending bars of iron. This bar is the genuine article which we tested before he began to play with it.
All right, guys, thanks for supporting the show. I got a list of sponsors here. So first off, we got Harito Bending, harito-bending.com. You're going to use promo code CHEERS for 10% off. And a portion of that sale is going to come back to support the show. So I appreciate that. You know, everybody wants to be on the Harito cert list. I haven't heard a bad thing about the quality of his bolts. I can personally say that they're the same every time. Some really hard bolts on there. He got certs for every style, including snapping. He's also got wraps and t-shirts on there. So definitely hit up HaritoBending.com and use the promo code CHEERS. Next, we got Jed Johnson's Nail Bending eBook. If you want to check this ebook out, if you're a beginner, message me for the link, because if you use this link, a portion of that sale is going to come back to support the show. We also have the Gripito Trainer. This is an all-in-one grip training tool. If you use promo code Beyond the Bend, you're going to save 15% off of a sale of $90 or more. We also have Gil, former guest, barrelstrengthsystems.com. Use promo code BEYOND for 10% off. Gil's got a ton of cool stuff on there, including the flask. This is a pinch device. If you can do a body weight pull-up on this thing, you're going to get on a roster. I think that's pretty cool. All right, lastly, we have Hard Life Fightwear. That's hardlifefightwear.com or .co.uk. If you want some rash guards or something like that for jiu-jitsu, they also got a bunch of other cool t-shirts on there. You're going to use promo code Beyond the Bend for 15% off. Also, if you want to get on a roster, an unofficial roster, hit up at Eat Chalk Get Big on Instagram. If you bent an 80D unbraced or two 60Ds taped together unbraced, you're going to get on an unofficial roster. The other thing is, if you snapped a horseshoe, I don't need a video. I'm keeping track of people who've snapped horseshoes just because it's a cool thing to do. If you've also snapped one into three pieces, hit me up. Or if you've snapped one laying down, there's only two people on that list, so get on it. Last thing, a couple new things coming up. I'm going to be putting out a feat of the week. This isn't really a challenge more than just like something cool to do week by week. It's going to be just like some athletic stuff mixed with some bending and snapping. So I'm going to be putting that out. And the only way to participate is just to do it and then tag me in the post and throw it up on Instagram or Facebook. The other thing is every month, I'm going to be doing a monthly challenge. We've had some really good participation lately. I want to keep that going. I have some really cool things planned. So I really appreciate everybody's support and looking forward to another good year. All right, thanks.
All right, Rick, welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks for having me on.
All right. So first thing I want to ask is tell me about the first time you remember seeing someone bend a piece of steel.
Well, thinking back on it, I would say that's mid to late 90s. I remember as a kid seeing Dennis Rogers on television and him rolling a frying pan. And from there, it just kind of was one of those freak things that you would rarely see, and that just kept leading to more and more stuff over the years. It was very rare to see that for a long time, and now with TikTok and Instagram, you see everybody and their cousin starting to bend steel, and it makes me happy to see that.
Yeah. Dennis is a lot of people's first look at it. It's usually people say they saw Dennis Rogers to some capacity, or like the World's Strongest Man stuff in the 80s, like bending rebar over their head or something like that. So that was mid 90s, you said?
Yeah, I would say mid to late 90s. It was definitely before I was in high school. I remember back in like the mid 90s was whenever I was fascinated with bodybuilding as a kid. I saw my first Muscle Mag, and it had Ronnie Coleman on the cover, and I just was obsessed with like building muscle and weight training after that. And I remember just sitting in front of the TV watching like something on, I want to say like whatever came before Discovery Channel, and just seeing Dennis Rodgers on it, just rolling a frying pan. And it was just something that just clicked with me because it was something that I could look at, and where I had been looking at these mass monsters with like 800 to 1,000 pound deadlifts. And then I see a guy that looks to be about my size doing something that was freakishly strong. And from there, I just started. I was already training my grip for other reasons, but I started looking for things that I could bend. Like I started with little tiny, like just framing nails and stuff, and kind of went from there.
That's cool. I'm trying to think here, like, so being an early teenager, maybe preteen, and seeing someone bend steel, it's like, I feel like that would totally like blow your mind. You know, I don't think I saw it at that point. Maybe, I don't think so. I think it wasn't until later. So I just can picture like someone being that age and it making such a huge impact on you.
Yeah.
So you said you were already into body, or you saw Muscle Mag and then you got into bodybuilding from there?
Yeah, it was one of those things where growing up, my dad was always a minimalist trainer, always doing calisthenics, kind of doing the whole caveman style training, go chop wood, pick up stones in the front yard, carry firewood, that type of training. And then, I mean, he was all muscly and ripped and stuff, but whenever I was about, I want to say 12 years old, I saw my first Muscle Mag and saw the freaks in it, all the bodybuilders, all the weightlifters. And I became obsessed with just getting as strong as I could. And for me, that kind of just spiraled into everything else.
That's cool. So you mentioned your dad just doing some training around the house. Was that just something he was passionate about too, or was he involved in it for a living?
He was always athletic and kind of an outdoorsman. So he did a lot of martial arts over the years and did a lot of grip training. Nothing like what I've gotten into, but in his own unique way, just a lot of I remember being a little kid, and one of the things him doing is just testing my grip strength all the time and allowing me to test his. So we would like shake hands and just see who could grip harder, and doing things like isometrics, just pressing as hard as we could, pulling as hard as we could, doing just body weight things. Like he would challenge me to do as many pull-ups as I could do, and as many push-ups and body weight squats, lunges, all that stuff. And that's how that's really what got me into athletics to start with.
So. Yeah. Wow. That's a cool foundation there. And you mentioned martial arts in there. What martial arts was he doing? And then what did you get into after?
He did several martial arts, just basically taught me a little bit of here and there. Whenever I was getting a little older, got into Kenpo for a little while. That didn't last long. I was kind of a little bit headstrong. So ended up in high school wrestling for a couple of years. Nice. Was able to take my aggression out in that a lot easier. And then took several years off, did a bunch of other stuff, but ended up doing a little bit of judo and jujitsu, just with some friends part-time. It was available in town for a while, so grip strength really came in handy there. So
nice. And then what about other sports growing up? Were you always athletic? Like, did you play other team sports or not so much?
I wasn't really a team player. Like I said, I got into wrestling. I'd popped in and out of like baseball a couple of times when I was real young, and team sports really just weren't it for me. I liked going out, just showing what I could do. And whenever I found out about like powerlifting, I was at the tail end of my high school years, and that was about 2000 to 2002. And I jumped into it briefly. But back then it was a real closed, kind of isolated, kind of only the freaks really did it.
You so never heard about it.
Yeah, it wasn't welcoming back then. So like I went into it, didn't like the environment. So I got out of it. I basically was just soured on athletics after that for a while. And I ended up going about my life for a little while, got hurt back in 2006, and had to spend about 3.5 years in physical therapy for a back injury. Had to have surgery on my back and everything. And that's what kind of led me to working in a gym. I wanted to help other people. And from there, I ended up just getting right back into weight training, and ended up leading me into CrossFit like a lot of people, which, well, let's put it this way, whenever you're doing snatches, clean and jerks, tons of pull-ups, grip training kind of comes back real quick. And from there, ended up in weightlifting and then right into powerlifting, and been there ever since, because nice. The environment has changed big time. It's a lot more welcoming.
Yeah, I graduated in 04, and I knew kids that lifted, but they were just, you know, doing bench press and curls and stuff like that. I don't think I ever heard the word powerlifting until maybe 10 years after that. It just wasn't a thing that was around.
Yep. It kind of depends where you were in the country. I had to, during my senior year of high school, if I wanted to powerlift, I had to drive all the way over to Murphy, which is about an hour and a half away, just to like do anything. Otherwise it was, how much can you bench? And that was about it.
Yeah. So did you ever pursue the bodybuilding stuff too? Or was that just something you liked as a kid?
Real briefly, I'm 5'2". So, whenever I was comparing myself to buddies of mine who were doing bodybuilding, most of them have a head or two of height on me and, just as much weight. So it was one of those things that I kept having friends encourage me to jump into doing like a drug-free competition. And really there was nothing around us. And then I guess it was 2014. We had a local federation start, and they put on a really nice show that first year. And I started having friends really encouraging me to do it. And I went on and did a show in 2016. Ended up getting first in my division, but ended up second overall in the show. So it was a good debut, but it kind of reminded me a lot of my high school wrestling days, because I wrestled in the lowest weight classes. And there was a lot of starving and depriving yourself. And it's one thing to walk around every day and have a little bit of definition, maybe some abs, but to do it, to get on stage, to go through the pageantry of it, it was a challenge. But it's one of those challenges that I'll do it once in a lifetime. I might go back and do it after I turn 40, just to say I did it. But there are things that interest me a lot more.
Yeah, sure. So let's take it the other way now with the, so you saw Dennis Rodgers bend the nail in your early teens there. When was the first time you said, I'm going to try this myself?
Well, I had tried obviously smaller things whenever I was younger, small tiny nails and just things around the house, like cheap aluminum pans and things, and just trying to make a taco out of one was challenging at first. But I think the first time, the first real feat of strength that I tried doing was tearing a deck of cards. And that's kind of my go-to, because decks of cards are easy to get a hold of. And there's basically like three grades that you can get before you start counting cards and everything. You've got the cheapo dollar store ones. And I found some of those and just started going at it. It probably took me 10 minutes to figure out how to do it the first time. And it was the ugliest tear I ever had. Had freaking blister tears all over my hands. I think the first time I bent a piece of steel short bar was probably, I want to say probably early to mid 2000s. I got a 60 pin and nail and just sat there, and instead of having it up under my neck or anything, I was trying to bend it like down around my belly, trying to do just braced, unbraced, didn't freaking matter. Just tried to get it to bend. and it took me a while, but I finally got it to start. And I remember that feeling of just being so proud of being able to bend it just that much.
Yeah.
Of course, my hands were hamburger meat by then. So, but back then you didn't have anybody really telling you how to do it. You had to be around Dennis Rogers or one of the other old time strongmen back then, just to kind of find out about it or understand the techniques. Around 2010, I think, was when I first found out about like Iron Mines Red Nail Challenge and everything.
Yeah.
And, I started following a lot of the guys that were on those lists and just messaging people and trying to talk to people who had like bent steel. And I started bending like rebar spikes and things like that after that. And then it just kind of snowballed after that.
Nice. So I definitely wanted, I found you to be super interesting, because it seems like a lot of times the guys that are doing the old time strongman stuff aren't really doing much in the weight room. Like the fact that you are competitive in powerlifting and doing the old time feats, I thought that was very unique and very cool and a pretty interesting perspective, because like I said, it's, you either have the guys that are chasing certs like the Red Nail and above, or the performing guys, which are like, it seems like as long as it's a good show, it doesn't really matter the difficulty of it. There's no point in bending a Red Nail because there's no difference between a, you know, easy 60 and a Red Nail to someone that doesn't know anything about steel bending, right?
Yeah.
So I thought that that you particularly is very cool that you are still currently competing in powerlifting and doing the old time feats and still tearing cards, bending nails. I just like that you're doing everything and seems like everything at a high level. So how'd you get to be at that point, Si?
Well, honestly, it just came down to after I gotten injured, that gave me a lot of time to reflect on what I wanted to get out of my body, because I got hurt in such a way that I basically lost the ability to use my left leg for a while. My back hurt all the time. I had to go in for surgery and everything. So I sat down and, I hit a low and I was just trying to dig my way out of it. But at that time I started going back and thinking about what made me strong to begin with. Like I mentioned earlier, doing isometrics, doing body weight stuff. And it kind of helped me rebuild my body. I started getting more and more into reading like programming theory for weight training and everything. And once I started incorporating all these things together, I realized that for my training in particular, I wanted to just be pound for pound the strongest I could be. Once I rehabbed my back, got hit in the weight room again, went in, just tested my strength, and just kept building from there. And really, it comes down to just consistency in the training, how frequent I train, and just making sure I keep a constant measurement of like volume and load and all that stuff. The reason why I stick and go around from each one of these things, other than the obvious, the old time strongman stuff interests me. I've seen a real benefit in it. It has a lot of carryover to the weight training. Like grip training helps you in your martial arts. It really helped me whenever I'm deadlifting. Whenever I'm squatting, I'm able to make sure that things are a lot more stable. I know that whenever I train like steel bending, in particular, like unbraced bending, it's almost like rehab for my wrists and elbows. As much punishment as it gives you, I've never had a major wrist or elbow injury because of it. I know I can brace a whole lot harder whenever I'm under the weight, just because of the amount of effort you have to put forth whenever you're trying to bend a piece of steel or tear a phone book or anything. So it's definitely the old time strongman stuff had a lot of carryover to my weight training, and vice versa. The bigger my deadlift is, the harder the steel I can bend. So,
And now you've done shows in the past, right? You've done performances and stuff.
I've done a lot of smaller performances. Obviously COVID has kind of kicked that to the curb recently, but, the one thing I'm starting to notice and one thing that I'm starting to think about doing is doing a lot more performances online. I've been just playing around with TikTok lately, been playing around with Instagram. You've obviously seen that. I think that's how you found me. But it's one of those things that before COVID hit, I already had a couple of other shows booked, just smaller, like some of our local venues that have like concert halls and stuff like that. And before that, I just mainly did it for smaller events. I had friends that would host parties. So I would go and I would bartend and do old time strongman feats.
Cool.
So it was fun. It's always been just fun for me. As much as I would love to do like some of this vaudeville stuff, I'll leave it to the people who have been a little better trained. So
when I've had other performing guys on, especially Mighty Mike Johns, we had a deep discussion of just about how difficult it is to engage the people, right, without coming at it as, or in his experience, he thought it wasn't necessarily the best opening to just be like, hey, look how strong I am. I'm probably way stronger than your boyfriend, girlfriend, and everybody else in your family, right? It's like, and I thought that was such an interesting point, and I want to hear your thoughts on it. Is just like, that seems like such a unique way to try to captivate the people without making them feel like alienated or diminished in any kind of way, because it is a display of strength, but then you're also trying to like relate to them. And I thought that was so interesting. So I wanted to hear your thoughts on that.
Well, I totally agree with that. It's stagecraft. If you are sitting there and you just walk out on stage and they're not prepared for it, yeah, great. You tore a phone book. They can watch that on YouTube for free. What did they get out of that? But if you go out there and you engage with them on a personal level, for instance, there's a strongman that I follow. It's his name's Babyface Reed Wilson. You can find him on Instagram. He's a really good guy. He discusses suicide awareness. And that's how he gets people to engage. A lot of these performing strongmen that I connect with a lot of times are motivational speakers of some sort. most of the time I try to just come in as a side act personally, and just engage on a one-to-one, just talking with people, and just engage them in a conversation and try to get, if I'm just one-on-one with somebody, try to explain to them how they can push their limits. Gotcha. And show them how to do that. Again, I love tearing decks of cards, because what can you do? If you have a little kid, I love doing this with my kids and other kids, just pull out like three or four cards, hand it to them, have them tear it, then pull out like 10, hand it to them. The smaller kids can barely start to tear it. Well, pull out a full deck and I just tear it in front of them and tell them, hey, if you work hard enough, you'll slowly be able to build more and more until you can tear one of these. If you engage your audience on a personal level, it's going to make them get something out of the show. It's not just you bending nails or tearing a phone book. So
Right. And I'm sure you have a little bit of comfortability with that in being a strength trainer too, as well. I'm sure you are able to connect with people about their goals and things like that, and it probably makes it easier.
I've actually used it several times, just that type of methodology to explain periodization and like progressive overload. It gives them a flashy visual that they can remember. Mm-hmm. So
I also like to hear this about this, because I find it very interesting that, like, as I said before, the balance between the show and then like numbers chasing. So you're a competitive powerlifter, so the numbers clearly matter to you. And you're, I assume, a competitive guy because you're chasing medals. And so do you find yourself wanting to push your show further? Do you actually want to bend a bigger horseshoe or bend a red nail in a show because it's pushing your own limits? Or do you find that it's just like whatever impresses the crowd is good enough to get the message across?
It depends on the format of the crowd. If I'm just there showing people a bunch of various strongman feats and just building awareness for that, obviously just tearing a deck of cards, tearing a phone book, roll a pan, bend a couple of nails for people, hand them out, do a horseshoe or a short steel bend, and they're happy. Mm-hmm. If you really want to like get them excited, obviously challenge yourself, but really you don't want to fail in front of a crowd.
Yeah.
That's one of those things that I really like Instagram and TikTok and Facebook for, or any social media. You can do a challenge on that. And well, let's put it this way. No one's going to be angry that they didn't get their money's worth.
Yeah.
I think I've only failed one thing whenever I was on stage with the old time strongman performing. And I was trying to roll multiple frying pans onto each other. Okay. And got the smallest one, went for the second one, and got it kind of just bent the wrong way. So yeah. I kind of looked at it and I had the third one in my hand. I'm just like, yeah, this ain't going to happen. And so I tossed the other two and just rolled the other one. But like, that was the worst fail I had. And I was able to save it just by modifying it real quick.
Yeah.
But I frankly wouldn't want to go on stage and just completely flop on something.
Yeah.
But as far as like the connection between the competitiveness and everything, I would of course love to like get on stage with another performing strongman or something, and of course like duel each other.
No, with that'd be cool.
Different feats of strength. I know I've watched a few other strongmen kind of go back and forth and with the group now, everybody is kind of challenging each other and you're bringing up challenges. So that's always a fun little thing. So
yeah, definitely. Well, how about motivation in general for, you know, pursuing the old time training, but specifically for your powerlifting? Is it just getting the most out of your body, like you said, coming off this injury? Or I'd like to hear your thoughts just on the motivation aspect.
Well, my motivation lies in, I know that if, I've seen my body at its worst. So I want to see it at its best. And let's put it this way, I don't want to be weak. I never have wanted to be weak. And after getting a taste of that back in 06, I never want to go back to that. So it's one of those things I'm constantly pushing my body a little bit more each and every day. I know that eventually I'll find a limit, but I'm going to just keep pushing and just see where that limit is.
That's cool. I like that. I can relate totally to just like wanting to be as strong as personally you can, you know. It's like, it's interesting. I was talking to a friend of mine and it's like, even though I haven't trained strength, like I've, you know, weight lifted here or there, but never with any type of like true dedication or like interest going deep. And I, you know, it wasn't until this year that I worked with a trainer or anything like that, or real programming and stuff like that. But it's always been something that's like been important to me. I always thought I was, you know, a strong guy for my size, whatever. And in grappling, you know, you try not to use strength so much, but that's like kind of a cliche, like strong guys are harder to grapple, period. You know, so it's like, it's been interesting just reflecting on that. And I very much had the same experience with my dad. Like he would lift sometimes, but he would, you know, we'd handshake and try to squeeze each other's hands like as hard as we could. And, you know, different things like that. And I think it's a interesting thing because it's basically universally respected. You know, strength is like a universal theme. And I think that's potentially why I could see the shows going awry, because if you're just like, hey, try this, and someone fails, that's like a very vulnerable and violating thing, because it's strength, you know. It's like, I should be strong. So I like your theory, your philosophy with that a lot. So how about goals, specific stuff, not just like I want to be as strong as I can, but what are you currently working on? And let's also talk about what you just completed, because I know you just competed this last weekend.
Well, as far as the old time strongman stuff is concerned, I do have a few feats that I am looking at. Like I mentioned earlier, I heard about the Iron Mind Red Nail back in around 2010, but I've never actually bought a case of Red Nails to do. And I am bound and determined to start training towards that. I've got the time now. And it was one of those things that I was planning on doing it while we've been kind of isolated during COVID. It's just, I was training specifically towards this competition that I had just gotten done. I just got the state open record for tested in bench press, and I've got all the submasters, squat, bench, and deadlift records. And it's one of those things that my next goal is to retake, because I just retook the state bench press record. It's now my goal to retake the state squat record, which for my weight division, of course. So if I can retake that, then I'll probably aim for deadlift after that, if I can achieve that. That one's that's one of those challenging ones that I'm looking at. I'd like to own all the state records, of course.
That's cool.
But the big challenge for this was originally this competition we were doing, we were actually, me and a couple of people on my team were registered an entire year and a quarter ago for another meet that ended up getting canceled and rescheduled. And then after it got canceled and rescheduled, COVID hit. So it got rescheduled. We ended up just having, for various reasons, we dropped out of that guy's meet and rescheduled into this one. So it's been a long time coming for me to go after these records. And now I'm glad I got them. Now I can move on to my next goals.
Yeah, so, that's really cool, man. Congrats.
Yeah, thanks.
So let's talk about training day to day. We can talk about leading up to the competition and then also what it's going to be looking like now that you're past the competition. What's your training regimen look like these days?
Well, pretty much I try to hit squats 2 to 3 times a week. Deadlift once or twice a week, various pressing throughout the week, usually trying to average out 2 to 3 times a week. But as I'm doing powerlifting training specifically, I train very sports specific. So if I'm trying to get a bigger bench press, for me, a lot of times it comes down to just increasing the frequency that I'm benching. If I'm trying to deadlift more, just increase that frequency, and just being consistent with it. Outside of that, like whenever I'm doing off-season stuff, it's a lot of dumbbell work, a lot of grip training as far as like pause deadlifts, things like that. As far as how I handle like the day-to-day training, I used to be real regimented, used to follow really strict programming and used to try to do the whole bro split thing. And it never really worked for me. Most of my workouts are very direct during competition times, but with the programming, being, I'm trying to think of the best way of describing it without just writing out my programming for you. But, essentially what you're looking at is like a typical squat day for me. I'll go in, I'll ramp up to a heavy double or triple and then drop it back to about 85% and just rep out and do as many reps with that as I can. And just try to tax my body. After that, I usually move away from legs and go hit the upper body as an accessory. Okay. And treat my bench press days similar, just kind of in reverse. So you get the idea.
Yeah, yeah. So are you going in with numbers for every day, like that you know you want to hit, or you're testing basically day to day?
I used to train with a weightlifting club over in Asheville that got me into this programming theory that you basically do a daily ramp, like whatever you're working on, let's say squats, you go for a daily double or triple. Some days, like if you're really close competition, sure, go for that heavy single rep, but then you're just going to train volume after that. And of course that volume is still very high weight, usually anywhere from like 75 to 90% of whatever you got on that daily max. So you just end up doing a crap ton of volume and it beats the heck out of you.
I imagine.
But it definitely gets results. That being said, as soon as you're done with that, a lot of times we move on to accessory work that had nothing to do with that body part because you've already taxed it.
Yeah.
So,
and you said you're doing as many reps as you can with once you dial it back.
Generally. And you break it up depending on what you're doing. So let's say, I mean, if you follow some of my more recent like training vids, I basically was ramping up to like a daily single or double on whatever lift I was on. And then I would pick like 85% and I would just get under it, do a single, put it back, pull it off, do another single, put it back. And just do that until my body was just like, no, you're not doing it anymore. And it requires, when you're doing that type of training, it requires knowing your body and knowing when it's going to say no, because it's very easy when you're doing that style of training to get hurt. I wouldn't recommend it, obviously, to an amateur. Any novice lifters, typically a good structured program works really well for them. But once somebody gets to the advanced level, like if they're a class one power lifter, then definitely they need to be challenging their body in a different way.
Interesting. And how many days a week are you doing? Are you doing almost every day? Or?
Generally, I'm training about 5 to 6 days a week. And it, like I said, it varies based on like how close I am to competition or depending on how I'm feeling that day. There are some days I'll just feel completely wrecked and I'll get up and I mean, I work in a gym, I own a gym. So it's one of those things that no matter what, I'm probably at the gym. It's really hard for me not to just walk around the gym and go do a bunch of pull-ups, sit on a machine, do some pressing or do some leg extensions. So no matter what, I'm probably doing something that day. And really, I mean, even on my off days, I'm doing more than what the average person's going to do in their daily workout. So.
All right. Well, that's a good amount of volume. And something I always like to talk to more experienced guys than myself is just, I've run into it a bunch of times already, especially in hard steel bending or steel snapping in the mix along with heavy weight training. And, you know, I'm suspect to overtrain. I've burnt myself out a bunch of times. So it's like, what kind of advice do you have to avoid overtraining, especially when you're new-ish and this stuff is so fun and rewarding and you're hitting goals and snapping bars you haven't before? So what are your thoughts on overtraining?
Well, I would say there's three major points on overtraining. The first is obviously just understanding your volume that you're doing. I frequently, like whenever I bend 60 penny nails, my goal a lot of times isn't to bend the hardest piece of steel. It's to bend a whole lot of steel all at once. And I know that I can bend about 5 nails before my hands start getting chewed up. And if I keep going, I know that there is an upper limit to where I'm going to be wrecked. Understanding that volume, that number, is what kind of keeps me injury free. And that goes across the board, whether it's steel bending, tearing things, or even being in the weight room. If you know that volume number and know your frequency number, you're probably going to be able to not hurt yourself. Yeah. That being said, whenever you overreach on that, that's when things get bad. The other two things is understanding that a lot of times overtraining isn't really necessarily the problem. It's not letting your body recover enough and not doing the accessories that you need to do to stay injury free. I can't count how many people over the years that I've taught just the simple like steel bending stuff and DEXA card tearing who don't do the physical therapy things like just stretching your hands and your forearms out afterwards to make sure that you don't end up walking around looking like a T-Rex. Or not doing contrast baths on your hands afterwards, just to make sure that things rehab properly. So those would be the major things for me.
Yeah. And how about on the heavy lifting side of things? What's some specific stuff for rehab you recommend with that?
Well, number one, obviously train the entire body. I can't count how many people that they just go into the gym. They want to be bench monsters. But then they want to skip legs. They want to skip squats because their back hurts. They don't want to deadlift because their back hurts. Well, the way I rebuilt my back other than doing a bunch of body weight stuff was by deadlifting, by squatting, by getting it stronger. So it's one of those things, you don't want to neglect anything. If you make your entire body strong, at least having a foundation of strength there, it's going to help a lot. The other thing is just making sure that you stay mobile. One of the big problems that a lot of people get into as they get stronger, they don't do simple stretches. They forget about the basics, and that ends up costing.
Yeah, absolutely. I feel like mobility is going to have a big rush in the next few years. I feel like I see it happening already online where I see more mobility specific coaches and stuff like that. I think because everybody got so into CrossFitting and then powerlifting from there, everybody's going to need mobility after.
Oh yeah. There's been a huge surge in that. Especially with the way the COVID lockdowns happened. Everybody had to go home. All the gyms closed. Even in my gym, one of the things that whenever we shut down, I built a whole bunch of online programming for my members, for them to take home. And it was mostly body weight exercises or like the really cheap equipment, things like suspension trainers or some lightweight dumbbells, and a ton of mobility work.
Yeah.
And, but it's accessible. That's the thing. It's totally accessible. It's easy to do. It's easier to train, and a heck of a lot cheaper if you're not building a garage gym. So
totally. Yeah, absolutely. How about nutrition? We talked about recovery. How about nutrition specifically, because you are doing the massive heavy lifting and the steel bending. I'm interested in how you stay healthy in that regard.
Well, when it comes down to it, I've wrestled in the low weight classes. I'm a 75 kilo weight lifter and power lifter. I'm not a big guy. So it's one of those things that for me, I've always been kind of the hard gainer. I have to eat like a freaking truck all the time. I just shove food in me all the time. And I was kind of the guy who made people angry whenever I really made one of my coaches angry whenever I was doing my bodybuilding show, because the night before I decided I was going to eat a pizza, and I did. And I still went up on stage to the next day. It's one of those things, though, nutrition wise, everybody is different. And that's the thing that people don't seem to understand. What works for me probably won't work for everybody. I like red meat. I eat steak. I literally, while I was wrangling my kids, I was cooking and eating a steak. I probably eat steak probably two or three times a week if I can, or at least hamburger or something. Whenever I'm heavyweight training, it's just my body reacts well to it. But I've also had a lot of friends that they can't do that. My main thing is just make sure that no matter who you are, you have to make sure you've got some source of lean protein and make sure you're getting an adequate amount of it. You got to have carbohydrates. It doesn't matter whether, unless you're really on a strict keto diet for whatever reason, obviously you need a good source of carbohydrates and healthy fats. Like really nutrition a lot of times gets overcomplicated unnecessarily.
Nice. Yeah. I mostly follow Stan Efferdine's like vertical diet, which is I try to adhere to it the best I can. And I've been doing it for a good amount of months now. And that's been the easiest thing that I could just kind of like stick to. And that is a good amount of red meat. And I feel like I've done well with it. It hasn't bothered me. And I feel strong, you know, stronger than I did before following it. So I definitely agree with that. And a lot of my, some of my strongest friends, you know, they're eating a lot of steak too.
Yeah. I've got a lot of friends in the powerlifting world that no matter what, no one can agree on what the perfect diet is for powerlifting, because you've got just as many carnivores out there as plant-based dieters.
Right. That's true. Yeah.
There's a super strong guy out of Atlanta. I think he goes to Georgia Barbell. He is a vegan powerlifter. Mm-hmm. And his strength just amazes me every time, because he outclasses everyone around him. Yeah. But he's been a vegan for a long time, and he's been training for probably longer than most of us. So yeah. It's one of those things that nutrition is different for everybody.
Right. So. How about mental aspects of heavy lifting and the bending? Everybody kind of has different things to say about this. You know, like I've said in the past, when I go to do a heavy bend and it's like I finally feel it move, it's like I feel like the map just got like enlightened, you know what I mean? Like it's like a bunch of tunnel ways and it was dark, and then like boom, it moves. Okay, now I can see the direction, like where I need to go. I just feel like in that first hit, when the steel moves, you get so much information back. So what are you thinking about during your bends and during your heavy lifts?
I would say the prep leading up to it, getting your head in the right headspace beforehand has to be more important, because I can't count how many people, and myself included, that you get that negative thought in your head that the steel ain't going to bend, or the bar isn't going to come off the floor. As soon as you think that, it's not happening. But as soon as you've got that, you just go out and you do your best. And if you hit, like you mentioned, if you're trying to bend a steel spike, if you're trying to bend a 60 penny nail or a harder piece of steel, as soon as you hit it that first time, if it doesn't go, you just got to keep going. You got to accelerate and just keep accelerating. Obviously steel gives you feedback, kind of like bending a horseshoe. You might have to adjust your grip. You might have to adjust your positioning. But if you keep hitting it and keep accelerating, eventually it's going to give way. Or you're going to break something. But hopefully it'll give way first.
Yep. I had David Kirshen on, who was a very successful multiply power lifter. And he was talking about why he loved squats over the other lifts, or more squat and bench than deadlift, was just that he liked the, like when you're descending on the squat, like that you can kind of feel that weight and you kind of know what it feels like before you actually have to, you know, go up with it. And I was thinking like, man, I think the total opposite is why I enjoy deadlifts. I kind of want to just like yank. Does this thing go or doesn't it? You know, I don't want to have that moment where I'm feel like, damn, this really does feel like all this weight. And then you get to the low point and have to go up. So I don't know. What do you think about that?
I like that philosophy. I hold records in bench. So bench press is kind of my avenue. I love getting under the bar, pulling it off the rack, knowing that weight's on me, and that if I can't push it, I'm probably getting crushed. So that it's that adrenaline surge I get from that gets me going. Squats, very much the same. Deadlift, despite it being like I used to be a lot stronger in deadlift than the other two, it was always one of those things where there's so many variables with deadlift, especially in the sport of powerlifting, because depending on what federation you're in, you've got like the Texas deadlift bar, you've got Rogue's deadlift bars, you've got power bars, stiff bars, so many different things. So you start getting in different variables, where a squat bar pretty much is universal, bench bar, same thing, universal.
Interesting. You said you were originally stronger deadlift over the other two lifts. What was it? What's that?
It was one of those things where I was quite a bit stronger in my deadlift. And it was one of those things that even whenever I was a lot younger, I was really strong in my deadlift while everything else was average for a weightlifter, but nothing to write home about. But then I started focusing on the other two because I saw them as a weakness. I was just like, all right, I'm going to do this, this, this. And I started hammering away at my bench and it paid off. And then I started hammering away at my squats a whole lot more. And now my squat and my deadlift are within 20 pounds of each other, and which is really annoying. So it's almost freakish. So yeah.
Yeah, that's amazing. Yeah, I noticed that, like looking up your stuff. And why I wanted to hear about that is that, you know, as a beginner, for the most part, my deadlift is way better. I mean, it's not a good deadlift yet. It's actually the guys that have been helping me will be laughing, but I swear that form is, there's a move in grappling called the outside heel hook. And that's a, you know, people grip it and rip it and can get taps and stuff like that. But the bottom line is it's a very nuanced move. And I've spent so much time developing the technique for outside heel hook. And I think second to that is that I've worked hard on something technical is the damn deadlift form, man. And it's frustrating because I felt like I could pull some pretty heavy weight for a beginner and a smaller guy and whatnot. So that's why I thought that was interesting too, because my bench is so, and my squat is probably even less impressive from there. So I have hope that I'll build those two up and maybe catch up with the other one and maybe learn some form.
Well, technique is unique to everybody. My advice, especially for any beginners out there, or anybody who's just not really, they just feel like they're lacking behind, go look up people with your similar body structure. That is the biggest mistake I keep seeing like novices do, is they'll try to look up some of the strongest guys on the planet and be like, oh, well, I'm going to look how he trains and do this and do that. And body structures make a very big impact on how you lift. So I would say that would be a starting point for anybody.
That's good advice.
Just wanted to get stronger.
Cool. I hadn't thought about that. That's really good advice. Thanks. How about injuries? Have you, besides the major back injury, any injuries from bending or heavy lifting?
I obviously, with bending, every now and then you're going to get tendonitis, like in your elbows or something. That stuff I've learned how to mitigate real quick. Luckily, I've got some buddies that are physical therapists that help me out and have kind of trained me to where I recognize the warning signs and can mitigate before it becomes a problem. In powerlifting, back in 2017, I competed in several different like tournaments and stuff, and I ended up hurting my hip, and I ended up tearing a glute and tearing my psoas. And that took me out of lifting for a while. I actually had to take about 4 to 6 months off, just no lower body movements. I was basically just doing like physical therapy exercises and basic body weight stuff, because everything I did hurt just so bad. And I mean, I would sneeze and it would just completely spasm out, and I would just be a wreck the rest of the day. I would say that's the worst powerlifting related thing I had. I mean, of course, no matter what, if you're in athletics, you're going to tear something here or there. You're going to drop a plate on your foot or something. I mean, things like that happen. But I would say the hip injury was the worst thing that happened. So,
wow. And was that from squatting?
Surprisingly, no. What it was from is whenever I was in my gym, I do all sorts of stuff, teaching people like the right and the wrong forms and stuff. And I was actually demonstrating the wrong way to deadlift.
Oh.
And that caused the initial pull. And then I went and trained with that initial tear. And it was just a minor thing, just a minor inconvenience that built up.
Jeez.
And it kept getting worse and worse. And I had a meet that I had to go to. And I can't remember the name of the meet, but it was a USPA meet. And I went to it and I was on deadlifts. And my second deadlift, I felt it tear. And I just completely screwed the lift. And I balked it. And luckily I got my opener, so I was fine. I made it through that meet. The problem was I was invited to the Nova Invitational later that year. And I went out there and I basically, I destroyed my body at that meet. Mm-hmm. And I mean, I did squats. I felt it go. I was like, screw it. Took a bunch of ibuprofen, went through bench press, made it through that, went to deadlift. Made it through it, but by the end of it, I was toast. And after that, it was just, I mean, I got the numbers I wanted, but it was a long recovery period. So.
Wow. Well, good. You bounced back from that one. That sounds brutal.
Yeah.
All right. So something I like to talk about is, so in my experience grappling, like I said at the top of the show, it's just like sometimes the guy with the strongest grip wasn't necessarily like cut up or anything like that. Maybe he was a stonemason or a bricklayer or some type of like a manual labor type job and had that farm strength or functional strength. And I just like to talk about how we develop that, because I feel like steel bending is a great way. All the old time feats, in fact, are a way you're building that functional type farm strength, old man strength. And so I'd like to hear your thoughts on that.
Oh, there's definitely truth to that. Like I said, my dad was not a conventional weightlifter or anything by any means, but he always had that farm strength because he was always an outdoorsman and always, I mean, I was raised on a farm. Growing up, I did a lot of landscaping with him. And whenever I was just out of high school, I was doing gardening and landscaping. So there's a lot of just grip, carry cinder blocks, go grab a freaking railroad tie and carry it across the yard, things like that. Some of the strongest grippers I know, and some of the strongest, like I've had friends that all they've done is worked in like mechanic shops all their life. And they're just big old boys and they'll walk into a gym the first time and deadlift 500 pounds. Like it's nothing. and it's freakish. Now that you've got social media popularizing strength, you're starting to see a lot more of these people come out of the woodwork, and it's really cool. So.
And how about from a trainer's perspective, if someone wanted to develop that type of functional strength, what type of training are we looking at for that?
Typically it really depends on where they're starting from athletic wise. If they're just a novice, obviously you'll have to program according to that. And also how old they are, mainly because somebody who is younger, you're going to have plenty of time to really train. So getting their head wrapped around, hey, you're going to be able to accomplish this in 2 or 3 years, versus somebody who's, let's say, 40 or 50 years old, who's having to manage a lot of injuries and pre-existing conditions, they're going to have to train completely different. But no matter what, if I have somebody who's wanting to, whether they're wanting to powerlift, compete in powerlifting, compete in weightlifting, start steel bending, it's all fundamentally the same. Find out where they're starting from and just make them work a little bit harder each day. That's really all it comes down to. A lot of people overcomplicate exercise programming, and really it comes down to that one simple principle. Just progressive overload is the technical term for it, but just challenge yourself a little bit more each day. That's it.
How about specific stuff? A lot of guys in the past have said, make sure you're doing like farmer carry and like sandbag work. Like, say if someone wanted to get strong for grappling, if we use myself for example or something like that, what's the specific stuff, maybe like the non-linear type of movements that we're looking at for that?
Bar hangs, basically just jump up on a pull-up bar, hold. Rolling bar hangs, or any type of rolling thunder style single hand deadlifts. Axle bar deadlifts is one of my favorites. I would say farmer's carries are kind of stock standard. It's just making sure that you have the right tools for that. You don't want to just go and grab a couple of dumbbells and walk around with them. That's just going to lead to tendonitis in the elbow. I found that out the hard way. Basically any of that, but some of the simpler things that a lot of people neglect, rice bucket therapy is also a good thing. Most people find out about this when it's too late. Get a 5-gallon bucket, pour a bunch of rice in it, stick your hand down in it, work extensions and contractions. That's going to help not only your grip strength and that extension strength, it's going to help prevent all the tendonitis that you're going to end up getting from all that training. So
nice. That's great stuff. All right. So we're going to start wrapping it up. I do a rapid fire series of questions called the medley. So the first question is favorite thing to bend. This, we're talking about material here.
Honestly, just the stock standard 60 penny nail. Just go to the hardware store. They're easy to find.
Yeah. How about hardest thing to bend for you?
Hardest thing to bend for me has to be horseshoes. It's just, they're so vulnerable.
And strongest bending style for you, if you just double over or double under?
Double under.
Nice. And weakest style?
Surprisingly, double over.
Do you think that's a mobility thing or a
It's definitely range a mobility thing? Thing. It's a mobility thing because I've got a big chest and like getting up here is just, I can't get the leverage.
Yeah. Yeah. I was wondering just because of the range too, because I'm 5'7" and I find the 7-inch bar is pretty uncomfortable under there actually. Like the red nail is 7 and a lot of stuff is 7. 6 feels a lot more comfortable. It's like, it feels like a dramatic stretch to be able to get a 7-inch bar underneath there where it feels like I can generate any power. Actually have a bit of a shoulder injury right now, so I've been focused on double under and reverse and braced and everything else while I rehab that. How about something outside of bending, old time strongman and powerlifting, strength in general, something outside this world that you enjoy?
Well, it still relates into it. I play D&D and I measure things based on the strength score in that all the time and how it relates. So I'm a nerd at heart. So yeah.
Cool. All right. And how about the one bend that's gotten away so far? What's something you attempted and haven't been able to complete it?
really, obviously, I haven't even attempted it yet. It's the Red Nail. I've tried to simulate it before I go and buy a whole big bag of them, but it's the Red Nail. I'm all looking forward to trying it, though.
Nice. And how about, let's do like the one lift that's gotten away. What's something that you've attempted and you just haven't got it yet?
Honestly, I haven't ran across anything on that I've really, I would say I've still not achieved a 300-pound clean and jerk. So,
wow.
Like that's what I honestly, eventually I'll chase it, but the risk of injury is a little bit too high right now.
Cool. All right. Here's a good one. Who's the strongest person you know? Now, this could just be like your dad, or, you know, it doesn't have to be some name. And if you can't just think of one, you can just pick somebody, just give them a little shine.
Honestly, the strongest person I know is my partner, Kat. She's raised two really great kids, and she puts up with me all the time. So
great. Great answer. All right. And best piece of advice you were ever given. This could be about strength or life in general.
Always keep moving forward.
Good. All right. And funniest reaction a person has had when they find out you spend your spare time bending nails.
That was one of my former bosses going, "Why did you just waste that metal?"
Yeah, everybody, it's like online, everybody's a comedian, you know, like you bend a wrench and everybody's joking about you wrecking a perfectly good tool.
Yep.
All right. In closing, who's someone you'd like to see me have on the show?
I mentioned him earlier, Reed Wilson, babyface. Okay. Reed Wilson. He'd be an awesome guy to have on.
Great. I'll get in touch. Thanks. And how about tips and advice for beginner benders or lifters too? I know we covered it a little bit, but specific advice for the beginners.
Don't get discouraged at first. A lot of people, they start thinking to themselves that they're not seeing the progress they want. And most people quit within the first 2 weeks. They really just give up during that first 2 weeks. So just don't give up, keep going, stick with the plan, and you'll see results.
Nice. And where can people find you on social media stuff?
Easiest way to find me is by searching Rick Strongback. That's my stage name, plus it's just what I use for all my Instagram and my TikTok handles. And I have a Facebook page that I'm going to start loading up with more and more content soon. So
great. And how about any events, brands, or gear you want to shout out? Make sure you include your
don't
gym.
Really have. Well, my gym is Downtown Fitness in Franklin, North Carolina. You can find us at getstrongwithus.com.
Great. All right, Rick, that's it. Anything else you want to say in closing?
No, man. Thanks for having me on.
I appreciate it very much. Thanks for coming on, and we'll have you back on somewhere down the line.
Sounds good.
Have a great rest of the night.
You too.